Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, my guest is Ayad Akhtar. He is the author of American Dervish. It's a first novel. And people who listen know how rare that is on Bookworm. But I found it to be a book that told me all sorts of new things. It's a coming-of-age novel of a new sort. It's the coming-of-age of a young Muslim boy. And it taught me more of what a spiritual life would be as directed by the Quran than I had experienced in any other book. So in that sense, it's an important book because it tells us what the world is like for a people we have, to some extent, refused to get to know and to another extent are just starting to get to know. Tell me how you came to begin.
I had wanted to write a book that was going to give a Western readership a felt sense of what it was like to be Muslim. There's so much discussion about Islam. We hear the word so often, hear it in the news, you hear it, you read it in the papers, and there's a lot of associations that have been accreted to that word, to that concept, but so few people have any experiential, emotional understanding of what it may be to be a Muslim, and then on top of that, to be Muslim in America. I wanted to drop the Western reader into an American family, an American Muslim family in the heartland, and to render a tale that was both familiar and new in an American idiom and in an American setting, but individualized against the landscape that was, drawn from a different aesthetic palette and a different emotional register.
You say the heartland. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
And that's where the narrator grew up.
Indeed.
And are you the narrator of this book in some way?
There is a, subtle play on Hyatt and Ayad. There's some overlapping letters there. So to be sure, there's a lot that's drawn from personal experience. I like to my sort of go-to statement about is it autobiography has been to say, well, I quote Wallace Stevens by saying that the process of creation is often building with wood out of one's own forest and stone out of one's own fields. And I think that's true to the process of writing the book. The story had its own necessities and its own exigencies in terms of, the arc had to move a certain way and characters had to develop in certain ways. And I couldn't necessarily follow, my life or draw from my life in terms of the events that happened in the book. But so many of the textures and so many of the sort of details have been taken from my own experience.
The book throws expectation off at every turn. It's one of the exciting things about it. At first, we think we're going to be reading a book about, westernized Muslims. The father in this family is a doctor, and their encounter with the more traditional but perhaps more hypocritical Muslim community. Instead, from out of left field, from Pakistan, comes Auntie Mina, who is both very cool and very traditional. She's reading the Beats.
Yes.
And she approaches the Quran as a spiritual text and teaches the young boy how to approach it that way himself, teaches him about breathing, teaches him about meditative practices. In fact, I went to bed one night with the character. he'd just gone to bed, and he's experiencing his first spiritual awakening on his breath, and I experienced it too. I thought, wow. Oh, how interesting, how wonderful to read a book that's taking me to a different level of consciousness.
Wow, that's an extraordinary tribute. Mina is a beautiful and brilliant Pakistani woman who has a young son, and she's fleeing a abusive marriage and a terrible divorce in Pakistan when she comes to stay with old family friends who are now living in America, her best friend actually from childhood, who is Hyatt's mother, the narrator's mother. And the book is essentially a narration of Mina's story from the point of view of Hyatt between the ages of 10 and 12. And structurally, it really is Hyatt's coming of age as well as Mina's American journey.
Once Mina has arrived, of all the things for the book to decide to do, she falls in love with a Jewish man.
Yes.
The partner in the hospital of the father in the book. What is his name?
His name is David, and he is a clinical neurologist, and he works closely with a radiologist by the name of Nathan Wolfson. And Nathan comes over one day to a barbecue at the house and sees Mina and is instantly smitten. And the two of them begin a conversation and actually share a lot in common. They both love books, and his tenderness and his intelligence, I think, appeal to Mina deeply. And, well, who doesn't fall in love with Mina? Even Hyatt falls in love with Mina. So Mina is a very easy woman to fall in love with.
And this is a very unusual meeting because Nathan's forebears have been in Auschwitz. They've lived through the Holocaust. And so for him to be interested in a Muslim woman has many complications. We've been considering that Mina might be tossed from her family because of her Americanized tendencies. But here's another man who could easily be disinherited as well. And he begins to study the Quran with her. Now, I am myself Jewish, and I felt, oh boy, this book could be a powder keg. And it isn't. It's a really reasoned consideration of not only how rationalists think about religion, scientists, doctors, but also the roots of all religion that would unite Muslim and Jew.
Yes.
Why did you want a book that would not be explosive?
Because I believe that my intention in writing the book has something to do with liberation and, expressing the impulse for liberation and expressing the impulse for union in a way. I think that's the deeper message of all the phase, the sort of personal mystical interpretation of all the phase. And you talk about the rationalist, what I would call the rationalist humanist rejection of faith that's represented in the book by a certain character set, notably the father. There's also the group of characters that are literalists and they represent the sort of orthodoxy. And then there's finally Mina, who represents a kind of personal mystical interpretation of the faith, which is about faith as a vehicle to a deeper experience of the present, a higher level of consciousness, as you were earlier talking about. The book is really structured as a confrontation between those three points of view, really unfolding in the evolving consciousness of a preteen boy who's trying to figure out who he is and trying to understand what's happening to his body. And in the end, the personal mystical, at least there's an attempt for the personal mystical to be the answer, as it were, to the question of how to have faith.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and I'm talking to Eyad Akhtar about his novel, a first novel, American Dervish. And we're talking about the registration on a young narrator, a young man who's just learning his own Quran, as he watches the interplay between his aunt, who is a spiritualist. She's not really formally religious, it seems. She believes, to some extent, in the deeper spirit of meditative practice, of the demands of the Almighty, and how one might live an ethical, a completely ethical life. But she loves literature.
Yes.
And she loves new ideas. And she's fled Pakistan to escape an abusive marriage within the faith. And so we're watching within the heart of a Muslim family a confrontation with America.
Yes.
It's very exciting.
I love the way you're talking about the book. It's you're bringing out so many of the colors that, you know, I intended to paint, and you're bringing them forth in this beautiful way.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, that's my job.
Yeah. You clearly do it well.
The book then made me aware. Now, I come from a family of people who have read the Old Testament but have not read the New Testament, mm-hmm. not even in a Bible as literature class, and have certainly never read the Quran. And I feel that to live in this world, a person has to be familiar at least with the sacred texts of the world's culture, that it's a refusal that borders on embracing ignorance and certainly is neglectful.
I believe. I agree.
And so I didn't, though, know that the Ibrahim in the Quran is
Abraham.
Father Abraham.
Yes.
And that his sons appear in the Quran too. And it's almost as if, as we read the book, those of us who are reading who are Jewish are seeing, oh, this is what happens
after,
behind the scenes, or at the same time, or what happens when Jacob and Esau part company. You know, it's a whole sense of a culture that once knew everything about the other culture.
Indeed. The thing about the Quran is you can look at it a couple of different ways, and the continuity between Judaism and Islam, continuity really between Judaism, Christianity, and Islam is, you know, is clear and is something that's often spoken about, though perhaps it's never a point that's quite fully gotten. You can look at the Quran as a secondary source commenting on the Old Testament because so many of the stories of the Old Testament are referred to in the Quran and sometimes told in incomplete ways, as if to imply a familiarity that everybody would already know X, Y, Z about whatever figure the prophet, you know, Moses or Adam and Eve. And there are variations on those stories, glosses. That's one way of looking at the Quran. Another way that you could look at it as deriving from the same source of inspiration. Of course, it comes much later. The Quran is a much later text than the Old Testament. They both share an expansive understanding of the human psyche, and they both contain flawed, larger-than-life, fully human characters who demonstrate the great good and the great harm that humanity is capable of. And the novel, American Dervish, doesn't try to paint the Quran to be only a beautiful text. It is a text with astonishing force and an astonishing lucidity about the failings of humanity. And it is also a text that is riddled with very troubling citations, which, if taken literally, can lead to tremendous destruction, at least hatred. But that's no different than any of the great spiritual texts, really.
What's impressive about American Dervish is that none of these points of view seem doctrinaire. We're not trying to convince the reader of one thing or another. We're trying to make characters who grow more complex as the book goes on. And we see in Mina, the book's perhaps most interesting, richest character, that she believes in the Quran as a complete, almost aesthetic doctrine, that to be crushed by Allah is to lead an ascetic and worthwhile life, and that she will be a dervish. She defines dervish as someone who will give up everything, sacrifice everything to the everlasting. Do such people exist?
Oh, well, that's a great question. I think there are people of all denominations who give themselves to a quest for a deeper sense of union and who strive to shed themselves of the attachments of a more superficial orientation in life. And Mina is certainly one of those. The title American Dervish is really, it's foregrounding the process of the shedding of those attachments which separate the characters from what one could call the divine source, as it were. Mina would see that as the present. Some of the literalists might see that as God's favor. The rationalist humanists would see it as compassion. And everyone in their own way is trying to move to that place. Some of them get there and others don't. I didn't want to be schematic in approaching these questions, because if I was schematic, no matter how well-intentioned I was, I was going to fail, at least from the point of view of being something that was convincing in terms of an artistic experience. And so the balance that I'm hoping to find is a balance that I'm working out in my life, which is not necessarily to come down on one side of something versus another, but to observe all of the forces in play. Because in the end, that's my job as an artist, is to transmute my observations into compelling story.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Ayad Akhtar about his new book, American Dervish. We'll continue after this short break.
If you're listening to Bookworm, chances are you're a big reader. Connect with other book lovers. Join our virtual book club on Facebook. Go to kcrw.com/bookworm for more info. Thanks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Ayad Akhtar about American Dervish, the story of a young American Pakistani navigating religion and modern life while in the throes of youthful desire. Now, difficult question. The American literary critic and eventual legal theorist, Stanley Fish, tells us that it's his belief that every fundamentalism will triumph because it's based upon passionate faith, whereas we, with our poetic and liberal and tolerant attitudes, we humanists are going to inevitably fail because we are willing to be pliable. That, to his mind, stubbornness, a ramrod refusal to accommodate difference, will be the triumph in the future world. Do you believe this kind of thing? What are your feelings?
I don't. I do think that following Yeats, the best usually lack all conviction and the worst are full of passion and intensity. But I do also believe in the possibility, and I'm not being Pollyanna-ish by saying this, I do believe in the possibility of faith not as a belief, not as an adherence to an object or set of rules or an ideology. I do believe in faith as an action, as an orientation to the present, a passion for one's own life, a commitment to a deepening of one's sense of the present that can be the vehicle to an extraordinary dispensation of our human freedom. And I think that at the end of the day, that pliability actually trumps the stubborn quality you're talking about. It may take time, and it may be idealistic to put it that way. Kierkegaard talks about it in terms of the knight without faith. That is to say, the one who believes that he will have the love object even though he knows that he cannot. And there is something about that orientation which I think is the deepest this is, of course, just my opinion, but I think it's the deepest attitude that we can bring to life. And I think that's what the great saints and mystics are teaching through their example and through their writings.
Now tell me, Ayad, the books that we love when we're young often are books that instruct about how to live, but they usually offer dark examples. Catcher in the Rye is a kind of anarchist book. Mm-hmm. Crime and Punishment is nihilist. You know, we should destroy the cockroach human represented by the pawnbroker.
I don't think that's what Dostoevsky's saying.
Dostoevsky's exploring.
He's exploring the question.
The possibility.
Yes, to be sure.
That we must act on our most passionate impulses. I wondered whether you can name other books that instruct us in a more positive view of faith, because I think your own does. Even though your character ends up eating a pork hot dog and dating a Jewish girl, he is interested in the most viable aspects of his faith, and he's looking for what he can maintain.
I think that Tolstoy's Death of Ivan Ilyich, there probably isn't a better example of the kind of narrative which can point us to the deepest truth about life, and that accepting what is, and that sort of radical acceptance, as the Buddhists would call it, is actually very close to the notion of submission within the Islamic tradition, though perhaps not always understood with that kind of subtlety. I think that that in any event was a story with it when I read it and have since read it at least a dozen times, always seems to shed a deeply truthful and redeeming glow on any possible human life. I mean, if Ivan Ilyich, as vain and futile a life as he's had, if he can be redeemed simply through the act of being present to his own demise, his own death, there's hope for everyone.
Yes, Ivan lives through his death.
Yes, he does.
And he spends days conscious of it by howling. It's a howl that Tolstoy tells us knows no end.
Yes.
He feels like his head is in a bag, and he's reporting the inside, the blackness of the bag in the form of his howl. It's an astonishing book in that a man falls from a ladder, begins to die, and as he recognizes his wasted life, he begins to howl. That's the death of Ivan Ilyich, you know.
Begins to howl, but also begins to experience the abiding peace and a perspective on the futility of that life, which Ecclesiastes would instruct us is the lot of everyone's life, irrespective of their accomplishments. And that's what Mina, in Dervish, that's the perspective that Mina is living toward, that she's trying to inhabit. At times she fails. And at times her attempts at submission to the will of the Lord, as it were, are actually instances of masochism. At least the reader will ask that question. And she is given, at the end of the book, she's given a kind of ecstatic, a sense of an ecstatic present. And whether that is an attainment worthy of the suffering she's been through is up to the reader to decide.
The hero's mother tells him that Muslim men are terrible. They abuse their wives. They drink. When they come to America, they look forward to experimenting with unfaithfulness. At least this is her experience of her own husband. But it seems to be the experience of the book as well. By the end of the book, most of the Muslim men we've met have disappointed our expectations of ethical behavior in one manner or another. To what extent does this book stand for a problem that you face?
My answer is twofold, and neither of the answers is politic. The first is that every character in the book is flawed, and they're flawed because they're human. So it is easy to take the angle of the point of view of the mother's sort of constant, you know, refrain about Muslim men being terrible, and to sort of see the Muslim men, male characters, and to see them through that light, and to somehow single them out and their failings as perhaps more egregious than the failings of the other characters in the book. I'm not sure that that is a perspective I would fully endorse, but I certainly understand it. The second aspect of that answer would have something to do with, I think, an abiding interest that I have in the feminine and in the feminine aspect of the spiritual, the feminine divine. And Mina, in a sense, like the Shekinah of the Jewish tradition, the fragment of God, the female fragment of God that is wandering the world forlorn, searching for union with the male principle, Mina herself is forlorn and wandering and trying to find some union. She is subject to the patriarchal order of the Judeo-Christian Islamic tradition. And in a sense, the book is an attempt to say the core spiritual essence of this tradition cannot do without the feminine.
Wow. I'm very happy with that answer, and I want to invite our listeners to comment on those books. Let us know. Come down to our website and tell us what books that you've read that have been a significant step in your own spiritual evolution. You can comment on our website by going to kcrw.com/bookworm. Or visit us on Facebook at facebook.com/KCRW Bookworm. I've been talking with Ayad Akhtar, author most recently of American Dervish. It's published by Little Brown and Company. Thank you, Ayad, for joining me.
Michael, what a tremendous pleasure. Thank you.
You can comment on today's show at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW smartphone apps. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to Craig Erthine. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
Read this, read that, read this, bookworm. Read this, read that, read this. I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Edmund White is our guest.